sometimes gave him back the brighter outlook of a naughty boy. He had a bodily impatience which played tricks upon him almost against his will, and had already rendered him rather too radiant a failure in civil and diplomatic service. Thus it is true that compromise is the key of British policy, especially as affecting an impartiality among the religions of India. But Vane's attempt to meet the Moslem halfway by kicking off one boot at the gate of the mosque was felt not so much to indicate true impartiality as something that could only be called an aggressive indifference. Again, it is true that an English aristocrat can hardly enter fully into the feelings of either party in a quarrel between a Russian Jew and an Orthodox procession carrying relics. But Vane's idea that the procession might carry the Jew as well, himself a venerable and historic relic, was misunderstood on both sides. In short, he was a man who particularly prided himself on having no nonsense about him, the result that he was always doing nonsensical things. He seemed to be standing on his head merely to prove that he was hard-headed. He had just finished a hearty breakfast in the society of his daughter, at a table under a tree in his garden by the Cornish coast. For, having a glorious circulation, he insisted on as many outdoor meals as possible, though spring had barely touched the woods and warmed the seas round that southern extremity of England. His daughter Barbara, a good-looking girl with heavy red hair and a face as grave as one of the garden statues, still sat almost motionless as a statue when her father rose. A fine tall figure in light clothes, with his white hair and mustache flying backwards rather fiercely from a face that was good-humoured enough, for he carried his very wide Panama hat in his hand. He stirred across the terrace garden, down some stone steps flanked with old ornamental urns, to a more woodland path fringed with little trees, and so down a zigzag road which descended the craggy cliff to the shore, where he was to meet a guest arriving by boat. A yacht was already in the blue bay, and he could see a boat pulling toward the little paved pier. And yet in that short walk between the green turf and the yellow sands he was destined to find, his hard-headedness provoked into a not unfamiliar phase which the world was inclined to call hot-headedness. The fact was that the Cornish peasantry, who composed his tenantry and domestic establishment, were far from being people with no nonsense about them. There was, alas, a great deal of nonsense about them, with ghosts, witches, and traditions as old as Merlin. They seemed to surround him with a fairy ring of nonsense. But the magic circle had one center. There was one point in which the curving conversation of the rustics always returned. It was a point that always pricked the squire to exasperation, and even in this short walk he seemed to strike it everywhere. He paused before descending the steps from the lawn to speak to the gardener about potting some foreign shrubs, and the gardener seemed to be gloomily gratified, in every line of his leathery brown visage, at the chance of indicating that he had formed a low opinion of foreign shrubs. "We wish you'd get rid of what you've got here, sir," he observed, digging doggedly. "Nothing'll grow right with them here." "Shrubs," said the squire, laughing. "You don't call the peacock trees shrubs, do you? Fine tall trees. You ought to be proud of them." "All weeds grow apace," observed the gardener. "Weeds can grow as houses when somebody plants them." Then he added, "Him that sowed tares in the Bible, squire." "Oh, blast your—" began the squire, and then replaced the more apt and alliterative word Bible by the general word superstition. He was himself a robust rationalist, but he went to church to set his tenants an example, of what it would have puzzled him to say. A little way along the lower path by the trees he encountered a woodcutter, one Martin, who was more explicit, having more of a grievance. His daughter was at that time seriously ill with a fever recently common on that coast, and the squire, who was a kind-hearted gentleman, would normally have made allowances for low spirits and loss of temper. But he came near to losing his own again when the peasant persisted in connecting his tragedy with the traditional monomania about the foreign trees. "If she were well enough, I'd move her," said the woodcutter, "as we can't move them, I suppose. I'd just like to get my chopper into them and feel 'em come crashing down." "One would think they were dragons," said Vane. "And that's about what they look like," replied Martin. "Look at 'em." The woodman was naturally a rougher and even wilder figure than the gardener. His face also was brown, and looked like an antique parchment, and it was framed in an outlandish arrangement of raven beard and whiskers.